Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing and smashing that thumbs up. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. A shout out to my patrons and my channel members. Without you guys, hell, who'd be around the campfire with me? Now let's get spooky. I live in a small town surrounded by woods and mountains, small to the point where everyone knows everyone by name. We have a single sheriff, whose job mainly consists of kicking teenagers out of private properties. We have one grocery store, family-owned, that everyone gets what they need from. If you need something special, you better request it 2 months in advance because every Amazon and USPS won't deliver out here. Our whole town survives on one large delivery truck. If it wasn't for the single road that leads out of here, we would be completely cut off from the outside world. Now don't get it in your heads that we are some backwoods lot who doesn't know what a smartphone is. We just take longer to get things. I have a PS4 and I have a laptop. I can enjoy some time on my stable internet when I'm too tired to hike. Despite being so small, we get along together greatly. Everyone helps each other out and we all work together to keep this place going. Crops harvested are bountiful, and there is never a lack of game in the woods to hunt for meat. We have a river that runs from a lake about a couple of miles out of town, where great fishing is at its best. Truth of the matter is, we don't need much from the outside world, and we are all happy with that. The one problem with living independently is that when you call for help, there is nobody to come. Since our town's creation, we have had only relied on one being, the Forest Goddess. We bring her offerings from our town every month, and they are always accepted with the bowls and plates neatly washed and replaced by the next day. I still wonder who in town cares enough about the tradition to keep up that act. But we have enough retirement-aged folks who are gladly to go through the effort, just to see the smiles on the children's faces. It must be like playing Santa Claus, except once a month instead of once a year. I can understand it to a degree. I get a kick out of being the Easter Bunny every year. The goddess is said to have been the one who saved our ancestors from a pack of wolves as they were traveling west. She saved every settler's life, but not one of them could possibly repay her enough for her kindness. In appreciation for her actions, they asked her permission to settle on the land here so that they could bring her gifts every month. After some consideration, she accepted their offer, stating that she will forever protect them and their families. Since then, every blessing has been attributed to the goddess. The goddess has not failed the town since its foundation. At least, that's what it says in our town's museum. I don't even know why we have a museum, except to have an excuse for the teachers to tell their elementary students that they're going on a field trip. The goddess still has technically never failed us. But I guess if she is real, she's ramping up the difficulty. Things have been getting rough around here. Something has been howling up a ruckus at night. It has destroyed entire fields of crops. The game in the woods is becoming more and more scarce, and even the fish are disappearing. We figured an abnormally large pack of wolves might be migrating through our area. With time, we hoped the wolves would move along, but after a month, they still have stayed. This month's gifts to the goddess were much greater in contrast to how little we actually were able to gain. It appears the elders of our town still believed in the goddess may come back and kill these wolves for us. But once they hit my buddy's cattle, I was done waiting for the goddess. Jason's family had been cattle farmers for decades. They supplied the town with most of its beef. Their cattle were locally famous to the point when they needed to bring in a new cow, they would send one of our breeders in exchange for another farm's best breeder and a buttload of cash. so you could probably understand why Jason was boiling mad when he woke up to see 3 full-grown cattle stripped to bone in the middle of the night. "That's the final line. I'm killing those damn mutts," Jason roared in my ear over the phone. "Are you going to join me or what?" "Yeah, man. I'll get my gear and head your way," I replied groggily, still trying to work up the energy to lift myself out of bed. "All right, just hurry. I don't want to lose those bastard wolves. We already have wasted too much time. Why didn't we do this when they hit Kimberly's farm? Or Brandon's? Hell, why didn't we just shoot the damn things when they first started howling at night? They're so frickin' loud, my mom can't sleep." Jason was going into another one of his tirades. I shouldn't say it like that. He never got pissed about something that wasn't worth getting pissed about. When he did get worked up, though, it was all he could focus on. He had been like this since middle school. When he found out that Fred was picking on his little brother Quentin, he nearly sent Fred to the hospital. As he grew to his now 6'4 and 300-pound frame, it's safe to say I'm glad we are best friends and hardly ever fight. "I have a few other calls to make, so I think I could trust you not to get lost on your way here, right?" Jason remarked with the slightest hint of a smirk in his voice. It was good to hear him cracking a joke. It means I should still be able to calm him out of doing something stupid. "Yeah, I think I can find my way back. I know it's been forever since I last visited," I chuckled. "Oh, did I leave my controller over there? I haven't been able to find it since Friday." "Dude, forget about the controller. You could look for it after we get revenge for Lucy, Grace, and Tyson."
"No, they killed Tyson? I thought you said cows."
"This is personal now." I finally was starting to get as invested as Jason. Tyson was my favorite bull. He loved me ever since he was a calf. He ran right up to me and jumped in my arms. He would still try to jump on my arms every visit, but we had to train him to stop once he got bigger. I knew his death was going to hurt way more later, but right now the shock and anger was pushing me forward.
"Tyson broke out of his pen trying to save the girls. Judging by his horns, he put up a hell of a fight, too. I can't believe there isn't at least one dead wolf lying around here. You think they ate their own? Never mind. I don't want to know. I'm going to call Mitch, Dex, and Marcus. I think a 6-man team will cut it. Or a 5.5-man team since it's Quinn," Jason said in a loud, mocking tone as a muffled, "Hey!" could be heard in the background. "I think just us two would have been enough to cut it, but safety in numbers," I responded while putting on my good boots. It was going to be a long hike. "And cut Quinn some slack. He's 19 now. He's a big boy."
"Yeah, yeah. That's what I would expect to hear from another youngest child." "You aren't going to fool me either with your youngest child propaganda. All right, dude. Thanks for helping me feel a little bit better. But we are still going to take the task at hand. I'm going to get calling. You get the getting, you hear?"
"Yeah, I hear you. I'm already 1 foot out the door, so don't go off without me. Somebody needs to keep a watch on you to make sure you don't hurt yourself."
"I ain't hearing all this shit again. See you soon."
"See ya."
I hung up the call and checked my phone's battery. It was nearly at full charge. Unless we were going really deep, I can always call for help in case somebody walks off a cliff or gets bitten by something rabid. I turned it off and shoved it in my pocket. Hopefully Jason doesn't try to call while I'm on my way there. I go to my gun locker and grab my Marlin 336. A solid gun who has treated me great since the day Mitch's dad got a whole shipment of them for us for our 18th birthdays. With Mitch's dad being the best hunter in town, we knew to trust his judgment on hunting rifles. And he did not disappoint. There's not a deer in the woods who could escape us when we first got our hands on these babies. I'm sure that it will work great on wolves too. Finishing my admiration of my old reliable, I go to close the safe when I stop myself at the last second. I open it back up and consider my Mossberg 500. I bought it mostly for defense, in case a bear ever wandered into my house. But on a trip like this, it seemed like a good precaution. I went ahead and grabbed its case too, before heading out.
By the time I got to Jason's, Mitch was already there with a backpack loaded with gear. Apparently, he had been waiting for a day like this to come. So, I packed all the tools of the trade. We got traps, we got motion cameras, we got bait, we got... Mitch was rattling off the name of every single paperclip and piece of string he brought along the Jason, as I noticed Marcus walking up.
Hey, Mark, what did you bring? Apparently Mitch brought his dad's entire stock.
I joked, waving Marcus over.
Oh shit, really? I just have some first aid kits and food and water.
I thought that I was over-preparing since Jason said I only needed my gun. Marcus looked at his supplies with worry. He always came prepared, and I really liked that about him. I couldn't count the number of times the water had brought saved us from dehydration or a towel he had brought saved us from hyperthermia. If there was somebody that I knew that I could rely on, it was Marcus. He was talented in medicine as well, and was about to start his apprenticeship with Dr. Ripley.
That is more than enough, Mark. I totally forgot about food and water, I sheepishly admitted. I was too preoccupied with my loadout to plan ahead.
Are you sure? I could run back and get more. It's no problem, Marcus asked, already prepared to sprint back home.
No. He's fine, Marcus, Jason chimed in. I knew he would do this, so I packed lunch and water for him, too.
Oh, okay. Marcus's body relaxed, and he was walking to join the circle.
So where is Quinn and Dex?
Dex is still on his way, and Quinn is trying to find out where he left his hiking boots. Jason shook his head in defeated disapproval.
Found them!
Quinn came bursting out of the front door, proudly stomping around in his hiking boots. Maybe Jason was right. Quinn still had a bit of growing up to do.
Great. Good job, kiddo. All that leaves is...
I'm sorry, I'm late.
Dex came running up from behind me.
I had to help Ma with the chickens. They were so spooked today, they wouldn't even come out of the coop. They know something nasty is going on here,
Dex said in a whisper, as if the wolves were watching us and he didn't want them to overhear. He was the town local animal whisperer. He just had this knack for being able to soothe even the most feral of animals and befriend them. He's been having a rough time with the wolves in town, though. He feels the animals' fear and is getting harder for him to calm them as he becomes more afraid himself.
The chickens aren't the only thing that are spooked. Are you sure you're up for this, Dex? You're ghostly pale,
I asked him as I touched the back of my hand on his head.
You're freezing, dude.
I'm fine, he insisted while shoving my hand away. Sooner we get rid of these wolves, the sooner the animals and I go back to living normally and happily. I won't feel better while these wolves are still out there. So I'm coming along, and we are getting this over with.
All right, Dex, you're still on for the hunt, but don't try anything funny like befriending the wolves and making us let them go like that one buck I had practically in my hands. These wolves are going to pay, and you can't talk us out of this one.
Jason chuckled, half joking, half serious. It was one time, and he was the alpha. His herd needed him. Besides, I don't think I could connect with these wolves even if I wanted to.
Do you hear them at night? Their howls are haunting. Ominous, even. It's like they're toying with us.
All I know is that buck was easily going to be a 16-pointer. And now we have a beautiful buck with an orange vest running around that you won't let me shoot.
Now forget about the howling. We're putting an end to that today. Follow me.
Jason led us to the back of his house and towards the pens where the cattle had been. There were three fresh gravesites. I silently thanked Jason for burying the cows before we got there, so I didn't have to see Tyson in such a state. He led us over to a giant patch of blood that dragged off into the woods.
This is it. The trail is easy to follow for now. But once we get in there, I'll need all of you to stick close to Mitch. I don't want you getting sidetracked by a fox's trail and getting lost again, Quinn.
Jason snarked at his little brother.
I was 8, Jason. Quinn snapped back.
Yeah, and if you acted like you were any more mature than an 8-year-old, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. Look,
You either listen to what I have to say, or you're staying home, got it? Fine, whatever. I haven't even done anything yet. Jason takes a deep sigh and puts his hand over Quinn's shoulder, looking at him face to face. I'm sorry, Quinn. Just I need you to trust me today, okay? This time, you can't go off on your own or run up ahead like you usually do. I know that you think it's cute or funny, and sometimes it is, but if you break away from us, you could get seriously lost or seriously hurt. We're not going on the normal paths this time, and we're not hunting herbivores. Yes, you are smart in school, but I am the master in the woods. I'm taking you with me because I know how much Grace, Lucy, and Tyson meant to you too. Mom and Dad would kill me if you got so much as a scratch on you, though. And I will never forgive myself if something happens to you. Okay, Quinn? I love you. Jason's eyes water up as he finishes his speech to Quinn. Quinn's eyes are running nonstop, and he could only nod his affirmation to his brother before giving him the tightest hug he possibly can. I've never seen Jason be so soft with Quinn before, Marcus whispers over to me. A death in the family does that. It makes us show our true emotions to the ones that we still have with us. Jason is blaming himself for this one, so try to forgive him if he gets short-tempered for a while. He is grieving, even though he doesn't show it. Yeah. How about you, man? You holding up okay? I'm fine for now. Reality hasn't really sunk in for me yet, so I'm good to go until we see this through. Then I'll be an emotional wreck too, so prepare yourself. I grin, nudging Marcus with my elbow. Thank you for asking, though. Jason takes a moment to try and discreetly wipe his eyes before standing straight again. Alright, last check. Bathroom, snacks, cell phones, ovens left on at home. This is your last chance to go back if you need anything. Is everyone good? Affirmations can be heard all around except for Mitch. Mitch, what's up? Jason turns to face Mitch, who is staring intently at the tracks. Are you sure these are wolves? These tracks are huge, dude. Look more like the size of a bear. And I know that you're built like Larry Allen, but I don't want to take our chances against a giant bear if it gets a drop on us. Mitch holds his hand next to the track, which is easily double his hand size. I know. But I know it was those damn wolves. I could hear them this morning. Look closer. Four toes. These are just some beefy sons of bitches, probably. Because they've been up in the hills for so long with no competition. You're right. The track shape makes sense for wolves. But seriously? These things must be a long-lost dire wolf if they're this size. Why are they even down here if they could grow that big up in the hills? Climate change? Quinn interjected before a glare from Jason made him go silent again. Doesn't matter so long as bullets can kill them. If we could hunt deer and elk, we could hunt some damn wolves. So you ready or what? I maybe should have brought some more bigger traps, but let's go. Mitch got back up to his feet and faced towards the forest. One by one, we lined up and followed Jason into the woods. Mitch followed behind Jason as the best tracker in case Jason got lost. Quinn was stuck in the middle between Mitch and me, so that he could keep an eye on him. Dex followed behind me and Marcus finished the line. Marcus liked to stay behind to make sure nobody broke off without being noticed. As we dove further into the woods, the sun struggled more and more to bring light down to us. After 4 hours of following the tracks of this behemoth wolf, we set up a small camp to take a snack break. How much longer do you think it'll take until we reach it? Quinn asked Jason. I don't know. If we got here earlier, we may have already found it. Wolves are typically faster than us humans, though, so it may have gained ground while we rest. Eventually, they would have to hide out, though, and once we find those wolves, they're all frickin' dead. Jason's tone held a hint of bloodlust I had never seen from him before. I understand completely why he is so fueled by revenge, but his tone is unnerving, even to me. I'm sure the den can't be too far, Dex chimed in. With how loud the howls are at night, They can't be holed up too far. Heck, at worst, most wolves have a hunting ground of about 30 miles. We have gone about 3 or 4 miles already, so if we keep at the pace, we'll find them before sundown. Dex gave Quinn a reassuring smile. Is everybody done? We should get back to it. Jason said, getting up and facing the tracks again. These ones are still a bit muddy, so they can't be too old. Make sure the rifles are at the ready. We never got a good count of how many of these things there are. But I don't want any survivors. Not even a pup, you hear me? Jason's back was turned towards us, and he was ready to march while the rest of us exchanged worried glances before reshaping formation. As we were walking past, something drips on my head. I wipe it off and check my hand, hoping to see anything but bird poop when my hand comes back red. I look up, and the strips of gore littered all throughout the branches above. What the hell? I blurt out uncontrollably, making everyone else turn and look at what I was struck by. Good Lord, what is all this mess? Is this some kind of sick prank? Jason said, surveying the unrecognizable chunks of meat hanging up by the ribbons. Hell, man, no wolves did this. Mitch shook his head in disbelief. I could feel Quinn now shaking behind me. I turned to check on Marcus and Dex, but Marcus is frozen in shock, and Dex ran behind and was vomiting. Once we regain our composure, we all exchange looks, nobody having any idea what to make of the scene before us. Let's just get moving again. We can report this to the sheriff once we get back. It's probably just some leftover work from a bobcat, or a flock of eagles. Nature is gross sometimes. We have our own problems to worry about. Jason finally pipes up, assuming a commanding role. I don't know, Jason. That's really not normal. I've never seen or heard anything like it. I think we should go back, Quinn interjects. A deep sigh escapes Jason, as if he was expecting Quinn's opposition. If you want to go back home, go home. These wolves aren't going away until we do something about them. So you could go back and cower at home. But you'll be thanking me when you still get bacon for breakfast in the morning. Without any further hesitation, Jason marches forward, and reluctantly all of us return to our positions and follow him. None of us feel like arguing against him, but I think we all know, including Jason, that was not a normal animal's doing. 6 more hours passed, and our morale was at an all-time low. Quinn kept looking back at me to ask Jason for a break, but Jason was marching a warpath. Whoever broke his concentration now was going to feel some heat, and I wasn't wanting to deal with that unless I had to. I was hoping the setting sun and increasingly limited visibility would encourage Jason to have us turn back while we still had some light. Wait, what the hell? Jason stopped in his tracks, causing the rest of us to bump into each other. You've got to be kidding me. Damn it, Mitch. What the hell is this? Jason shouted, pointing to the small clearing up ahead of us. The same clearing we had sat at 6 hours ago. You can't be serious, Jason. You and I both watched the tracks. You know we didn't stray off path. It probably was just patrolling its territory. Mitch was working hard to find a logic in how we wound up in a giant loop. Or we followed old tracks and wasted our time today. I thought you were going to fill in your dad's shoes. If we put you in charge of hunting, the whole town is going to starve. That's not fair, Jason. You and I didn't see any other tracks. How could we get on the wrong path? So what? You're saying the wolves are toying with us? The wolves led us in a giant circle on purpose? Just admit it, you messed up. Jason, hey, let's relax. What's done is done. We could set up traps at your place instead and stay up until we catch the wolves. We won't let another cow become a victim to these rabid dogs. Marcus interjected, trying to draw Jason's attention to him while I pulled Mitch aside. Mitch, don't take it personal. Jason is really emotional right now. He doesn't mean what he says. I whisper to him. I know, dude, but it's still messed up to say. He knows I worry about replacing my dad, and he isn't being fair. He's just saying hurtful things because he's so angry. You're a great tracker, and you're going to be even better than your dad. I tried to reassure him, but our attention is quickly pulled away. Hey, y'all, listen! Dex shouts, silencing all of us. After a brief pause, I speak up. What is it? Listen. It's silent. The trees are silent, Dex says, now in a more hushed tone. No shit, the forest is silent, I've been yelling. Animals don't typically like that, Jason retorts. No, think. When did you last hear a critter? Even when we were walking quietly. Dex stares intensely at Jason, causing Jason to take the question seriously. A while before we set up camp here, the first runaround. What about it? Jason's eyes grew wide shortly after finishing his sentence as the realization dawned on him. His eyes shifted immediately to Quinn. He must have remembered the grizzly scene not far from here, realizing whatever made that is probably back and very close. It sounds crazy, but what if... Dex was quietly cut off by Jason. We are heading back now. All hints of anger in his voice had been replaced by sheer panic, and we all huddled together and began jogging back. Quinn, you stay in the middle, you hear me? Don't you leave until we get home, Jason shouted as we jogged. Why? What's going on? What was Dex about to say? Quinn demanded answers. I was going to ask, what if we are the ones being tracked? Maybe we had been getting stalked the whole time. Dex suddenly grimmed. With that, we all picked up the pace a little bit. Not running to make us appear like prey, but just fast enough to get home in time before we got stuck out in the woods at night. The sense of danger loomed over us with every step we took. The feeling of being watched has never been so strong before in my life. Every creak and crack within the forest caused us to go just a little bit faster, until we all made a dead stop. There's something in the path. A buck lays, bleeding from an enormous gash running down the length of its body. Its breathing is slow and labored. Is that a deer? In the middle of the path? Is it alive? Quinn asked, barely holding back his panic. That's Alpha. The buck Dex won't let me have, Jason replied. Alpha? We have to help him then. Dex, come on. Quinn went the run towards the buck, but Jason grabbed his arm tight. Quinn, no. This ain't right. Predators don't just leave prey alive and breathing, especially not these damn wolves. There was nothing left of... Quinn ignores Jason and breaks his grip. Quinn, damn it, no! Jason starts to run after Quinn towards the buck, but Quinn is faster. We all start running behind Jason. The moment Quinn reaches the buck, an enormous shadow envelops him. Quinn barely had time to look up before the creature dropped down on him and crushed him against the ground. The figure is grotesque, as if any ungodly creature from the worst imaginations of a gothic horror or something that had crossed the realm of fiction and entered reality. It stands on four thick canine-like legs. From the sides of its body are two more gorilla-sized arms, with unnaturally long fingers that end in dagger-like nails. Its head is a massive wolf's head, with the teeth being mixed of canine and shark. It snarls at us, and we all are paralyzed by this monstrosity. Quinn let out a whimper, and with a glance, the creature slams its hulking arm down upon him again, flattening him into nothing but a mess. Quinn! Jason lets out a battle cry, breaking me from my paralysis, and begins unloading his Marlin 336 into the monster. I draw my gun and do the same. We both empty everything we had loaded into the beast. And when Jason hears his gun clicking, he rushes the monster and starts beating it with the butt of his rifle. Through all the attack, the creature barely flinches, After a couple more hits from Jason, the beast picks him up in both arms and effortlessly rips him in two. It looks in my direction and hurls the upper half of Jason to me. It feels like being hit by a cannonball, and I could feel my lower spine snap as I go flying. Mitch drops everything and attempts to make a run for it, but the monster is quicker than it looks. It charges him, grabbing him by the back and forcing him to the ground as it drags him at full speed. A red trail of blood and flesh is left behind it before it slams the remains of Mitch into a tree. Mitch's body stays smeared in the giant crater left behind in the old oak as the beast removes its arm. I'm sorry. I could hear Dex chanting over and over again. I look over to see him curled up in a ball weeping as the creature slowly approaches him next. I pull out my Mossberg, but I can't find the strength to lift it. Come on! I hear a whisper to my right. I look over to see Marcus hiding behind a tree waving for me to hide with him. I can't move. My back! My legs don't work! Go! I manage to whisper back before a foundation of blood comes rushing up my throat. Marcus looks at his escape and then back towards me. He shakes his head and comes crouching, running over to me. I'm sorry. A sickening crunch fills the forest and Dex goes silent. After a short pause, I hear the beast punching the ground again, then again as it works itself into a frenzy, flattening the remains of my friend. I keep my eyes averted, but I cannot deafen myself to the brutality. Shit, Marcus. You were supposed to run. You could have made it, I strain to say. You do the same. Just give me your arms. Marcus goes to pick me up, but I shove him back as adrenaline fuels me enough to raise my Mossberg and fire directly into the beast's face as it snaps to take Marcus's head off. The powerful shot hits its eye and it recoils, covering its eye with one hand and swinging wildly with the other. I hold my Mossberg up defensively, and its claw cuts right through it before catching Marcus's on the neck. The swipe catches under Marcus's jaw, and as the beast yanks its arm up, his head is torn clean off. I could only watch as my last friend I had falls to the floor, and his head rolls off into the woods. Defenseless, alone, and tired, I resign myself to my fate as I look the monster in the face one last time. But the death blow didn't come. Instead, a white flash came from the trees and struck the beast hard enough to send it crashing through multiple trees. I blink, and before me stands a woman. She is in glistening white armor, holding a large sword in one hand and carrying a shield strapped to her other arm. I always wondered what my brain would hallucinate before death. In a blur, she is on top of the beast again, slashing it faster than my eyes can process. The monster howls in pain before a frenzied swing catches the woman and she goes crashing against a tree. It gets back up and faces her as she shakes off the blow. At full speed, the monster charges toward her, but she gracefully steps sides the beast and runs her sword along its body as he passes. The beast topples over, unable to stand. It hurls its fist towards the woman, but she drops her sword and catches it with both hands. With some effort, she twists the hulking arm of the monstrosity and breaks it. The thing howls out again in pain. The woman picks back up her sword and stands on the monster's neck. With one last powerful swing, the beast's head falls from its shoulders, and she stands triumphantly before turning back towards me, as if she had just remembered I was there. My vision is starting to go from fuzzy to black, and the last thing I remember is the feeling of someone picking me up and the faint sound of wild howling in the distance. I've just awoken in a shack out in the woods, and I have no clue where I am or who lives here. The first thing I could think of is to pull out my phone and write everything I could remember. I still have some signal, so I must be somewhere close to town. I'm going to send this in hopes that it reaches somebody. As long as someone may know the truth of what lies in these woods, maybe the next people will have a chance. I hear something coming towards the shack. Whoever you are, whatever you do, if you hear the howling coming from the woods, run far away.